Welcome to another episode of A Presence on Your Journey from Community Autism Resources. It is my distinct pleasure to have as our guest Mr. Casey Fredette, who is the Executive Director of Forever Paws, P-A-W-S, an animal shelter in Fall River, Massachusetts. Mr. Fredette, welcome to our podcast and welcome to Community Autism Resources.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleased to be here today.
I'd like to start our conversation if you can give us a brief background of yourself.
Sure. I am a father of three. I have a wife that is nothing short of amazing and has the tolerance of a mythical creature. I am in charge of the Forever Paws Animal Shelter, as you mentioned. Within the last 2 years, I was evaluated and diagnosed on the autism spectrum scale.
I had read the article, the report that was in the Fall River Herald News, and that led me to ask you some questions, because in some cases, or cases that I'm aware of, it's way younger.
Yeah, absolutely. So my personal history, I grew up on the South Shore of Boston. I was what has often been called feral. I was something of a feral child. I didn't grow up with biological parents or adoptive parents or foster parents. I was passed around a lot. I spent time in homeless shelters. I had a wonderful, caring social worker that was assigned to me. And I spent a lot of my time bouncing. And this was discussed with the woman that did my evaluation of the underlying issues, if you will, the things that are markers typically that are caught earlier in childhood. There was no consistency. And so without a consistent caregiver, no one ever really stopped to question why I, as a child, was repulsed by touch, or some of the issues I had with learning or interacting with peers and adults.
So as you were being educated, did you notice anything different in terms of learning or in terms of growing up, being with peers and things like that?
Yeah, for sure. I have found for myself and the form of autism that it turns out I have and live with, there are some real serious perks. I have photographic memory that other people don't seem to necessarily have. I'm able to recall things. My wife abuses it, and so she never knows where her phone is, because she knows I can tell her, even though I didn't touch her phone, I can tell her where she left her phone 3 hours ago. So there are some real benefits to it. However, some of my weaknesses do relate to feeling wrong, to feeling like I don't fit in the world. I feel, especially when it comes to other people, things that are so easy, interacting, touching, talking, small talk, it does lead me to feel a lot of the time like I'm pretending. And I felt that way as a kid. I was parroting, I was mimicking what other people were doing, and I wasn't doing it well, especially as a young child. It left me very, very isolated. Thankfully, as I got older, hit junior high and high school, and there were other offbeat people that were accepting and more outgoing and patient with me than I was with myself, I started to kind of find a place in the world, find ways of managing interacting with other people. And then for school, I was put into special ed with no diagnosis, no specific reason for being put into special ed. The weaknesses versus the strengths that I mentioned before, concepts, things that aren't concrete, that aren't tangible, I have a very hard time with. So math is just a joke. I can't. You don't want to ask me to teach my four-year-old how to do 2 + 2, because things like that are very, very difficult for me to comprehend and to follow. I can't conceptualize like that.
I was curious about the memory part of it. Well, first of all, do you think your peers were aware of that? And second of all, did they kind of tease you or, you know, give you things to kind of test your memory or things like that?
Yeah. So growing up, like I said, it was a mixed experience. I felt pretty relentlessly teased, especially early on, and I didn't understand why. It was very hard for me at the time, and I was very alone. I didn't have consistent caregivers. There was no one there to help with it. So I would get picked on, and I had my nose cracked with a bottle full of rocks. And even my caregivers, even some of the more charitable ones, always described me, to my dismay, to my face, as being a bit off. So it was something I heard a lot. But then as I got older, I'm 6'4". And honestly, I appreciate being tall because I partially think it was something of a lifesaver because I hit 6 foot in sixth grade. And that's when the bullying went a little more hands off, went a little bit more to name calling and things from afar, because most people don't want to take a fight on with someone who's 6'4". Mm-hmm. And yes, there was always, tell me my mom's license plate number. And I would tell them their mother's license plate number. What did we do here? There was a lot of...
When did certain things happen?
Yeah, I could name off all of the popes, which I think especially funny because I'm not religious. I wasn't raised religious. I just find popes fascinating. So it's definitely been something of a parlor trick. Even now, as an adult, people still enjoy calling me Sheldon. And I also get compared to Dr. House a lot, mm-hmm. which once I finally saw that show, I realized wasn't the biggest compliment I was being paid. Dr. House has got some issues.
Now, were you relieved when they put a name to it, when you were finally...
Yes. So as an adult, like you said, getting diagnosed is mostly something you go through when you're younger. Mm-hmm. So I can't speak to the process for youths, but as an adult, it was almost like speed dating. It was like a graduation system. So first I had to go and see a therapist, and the therapist had to go through with me. Why get diagnosed? There's no pill. There's no medication I can prescribe to you if you come back with the diagnosis and what I hoped to gain from it. So once I graduated from her, she sent me on to the specialist. I sat down for another interview with the head doctor there, and we went through. I hear a lot that when you meet me and interact with me, the characteristics aren't obvious unless you sit down and you pay attention to me. You hear life through my lens, so to speak, which was a weird compliment to be given by that doctor. So I graduated through him and then went in for, I believe it ended up being about 4 days of testing, several hours at a time to get the diagnosis. And my wife was one that also wondered why I would want that at this point in life. I'm 36 years old, so I was 34 or so when this started. And for me, it definitely, you always hear there's no one autism, there's no set way of being.
Each person is different.
Exactly. Right. But knowing that I was the way I was, even as an adult, even as a cocky adult, just knowing that it wasn't a personal shortcoming, that I just wasn't trying hard enough, that I just wasn't failing at being a regular person, to know that the way I am is the way I am, and that it's not just me failing.
I noticed you used the term graduation. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a positive term that I noticed when you were...
Well, it was a very bizarre setup. I think they handle it really well. This was all done in Rhode Island, mm-hmm. and I felt it was handled very well. But they do. They seem to have a real concern, especially for adults seeking an evaluation, that they're setting themselves up, that the adult seeking the evaluation is setting themselves up for catastrophe with the belief that, oh, I'm going to get checked out and boom. I'm going to be different. Boom, I'm going to enjoy eye contact. Boom, I'm going to like to be touched. Boom, I'm going to be better at social situations, whatever each person's thing is. So it was a very thorough process where essentially you had to, graduate. The person that you sat down with in the 4 or 5 different settings had to say, okay, I think you're a candidate for the next step.
How did you become interested in running an animal shelter? How did you become interested in animals? What was that road for you like?
So growing up, some of the houses I lived in were quite colorful. There was one that I recall having to help trap the 50 or 60 cats that lived on the premises because the ASPCA or whatever was taking them away from the house. So I had some mixed early interactions with animals. I also had my face mauled by a German Shepherd in a lab when I was about 9 years old. I could show you the scar if I hadn't grown this comical beard. And so I graduated high school from a really amazing high school that I was very fortunate to be at. I don't think my life would have been worthwhile or of any substance if I hadn't had that opportunity to be where I was. And I started immediately into college, but because of finances and not having parents and not being able to afford to go get the court waivers that I didn't have legal guardians, I went part-time, so I started working at a pizza place, and one day that was slow. The owner was reading the newspaper, if anyone recalls what those were, and there was a picture of an animal in the classified, and so I started as a kennel technician part-time. It's a fancy term for I fed, cleaned up the waste, washed the walls, and from there I moved into helping in surgery, and it's just animals, for me, it's a lot easier to interact with animals than it is people. It plays to my strengths that an animal, one day to the next, because of the way my mind works, the way I believe my mind works, I can see tiny differences. I can remember from one day how big a cut might have been or how the animal looked. And so I have an attention to detail that works very well in the animal field and has taken me to where I am now. I've worked with endangered sea turtles, dolphins, manatees, farm animals, zoo animals. I've worked disasters, and it's a double-edged sword, if I'm totally honest, where animals became my personality and my personality became animals. So it's something I've been able to excel at, and it takes the attention off of me. Oh, here I am, but you know what I happen to do? Do you like cats? And I can transition the focus over to my field.
Now, how did you end up in Fall River at Forever Ponds?
So I had been to Rhode Island maybe a handful of times in my life, and then I met my wife, who was from Rhode Island, so now I live in Rhode Island, as seems to be the case with most Rhode Islanders. They bring imports through marriage. And I was working at a spay and neuter clinic, and the position in Fall River came open, and I applied for it and was rejected for a woman who we, as I understand it, had very similar backgrounds, and they, for whatever reason, she probably had a better personality. They had gone with her, and then she backed out at the last minute, and that was almost 4 years ago.
Oh, so you've been at Forever Paws for 4 years.
Yes.
How old is Forever Paws? Do you know how long it's been around? Or
we are celebrating our 23rd year of operation, so we're old enough to drink, which is fantastic.
So for people who may not be familiar with it at all, what is Forever Paws? What is its mission? And how did it get started as an animal shelter? Is it the only animal shelter we have in Fall River?
No, so there's actually two animal shelters in Fall River. There's the Animal Rescue League of Fall River, otherwise known as FAXN, which is attached to a clinic, which is over by the Highlands, if you know Fall River, as I've been forced to do, learn the ways of Fall River. And we are on the south end of the city. We are actually on the Tiverton line. We're on Linwood Street, which is by the new South Coast Landing shops and the Stop and Shop. The organization started actually off of animal control. The animal control department in Fall River had a trailer, as I understand it, that they kept animals in, and they were understaffed, as is usually the case. And some volunteers went in, helped out, and really got a concerted effort going that culminated in the building of Forever Paws Animal Shelter on Linwood Street. We do work with Fall River currently, the city. We have municipal contracts, so we are the contracted shelter for the city of Fall River, the city of New Bedford, and the town of Westport. And then obviously we are a private animal shelter outside of that with a mission to give animals a new leash on life. So we are a no-kill animal shelter. We don't put time limits on our animals. We treat things that are manageable, and we work hard to provide the animals the best quality of care that we can, which is a massive task, as you can probably imagine, to care for this many animals at high rate of care.
I did go on your website. I listened to a virtual tour of the facilities. Mm-hmm. It was given by one of your, I think it was either a volunteer or a staff person. Her name is Beverly Andrade on the website. So I wonder if you can give our listeners an idea of what it looks like, what one would see if they would want to come and visit or check out the facility.
Absolutely. So Beverly Andrade is actually one of our founding members. She was one of the volunteers working in that trailer, and she's on the board to this day of directors. So we're lucky to have her, and we're lucky she felt so inclined to help the animals at Fall River 23 years plus ago. If you visit Forever Paws, we are at the end of a dead-end road, which works to our advantage. The building is actually built to more resemble a home than an industrial building. So we're one story. When you walk in, we have a lobby, obviously. Everything's very tight. Our space is very tight in the shelter. because every year we take on more animals and do more adoptions. So you walk in, we've got the front desk, which is staffed by volunteers. They answer the phones, they have an assigned day of the week. We have two offices for myself and the office manager. We have two community cat rooms. So these are rooms where the cats aren't caged. They're free roaming, there's furniture. I don't know if you're familiar with the term catio, but that is an outdoor enclosure.
Like a patio?
Yes, but—
Except for cats?
But for cats. We have play furniture like you would have for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, it's all fenced in, totally safe, and there's a window that the cats can come and go from inside to outside, which really just helps their enrichment. It expands their day, what they can do, the smells they can take in, and keeps them from getting too bored while they're in this situation in the shelter. So moving on from there, we have other rooms where we hold cats. We do have cages in some of the rooms. We have what we call the diva room. And what it is it's the cats that are too diva-ish to exist with other cats. And we use the diva room actually to try and step them down from that, to try and acclimate them to the cats with the ultimate goal of moving them into the open cat rooms where they can have more freedom and space and interactions. And then we have two dog kennels. One is off access, so the general public can't go into it because that's where we hold the stray dogs that the cities bring us, quarantines, and dogs that haven't been evaluated yet. So we have a holding area for them, and then we have an open kennel where you can come in, walk through if you're interested in adopting a dog, or you're just thinking about it, or you just miss your dog and you want to see some dogs. You can come out, you can take a walk through the kennel and see the dogs that we have in there.
Okay, so what are the range of animals that you have?
So that's been a personal point of pride for me. Originally, we were a very traditional cat and dog shelter. The shelter is built for it. However, I get bored easily. And so we have rats, mice, hedgehogs, sugar gliders, rabbits, guinea pigs, reptiles, turtles and tortoises. We've had pigs, goats. We have a lot of chickens come through. I don't know why. We had someone call one day to surrender their emu, which unfortunately the person at the desk turned them away. I was quite sad. But in fairness, I have no idea where we were going to put an emu in our building in Fall River. So it was for the best. But we work closely with the animal control departments, which brings in a good number of our strange animals. And then we also are partners with the ASPCA, the Humane Society of the United States. We work with partner shelters in Georgia, Puerto Rico, all over. We work with a partner shelter in St. Thomas. So we have a lot of variety. We have a lot of animals. We have a lot of species. So we are, I believe, a very unique community asset.
You once brought a rat into the radio station.
Yes, I did.
I was listening to the show. What was the reaction?
Oh, well, that was on the Mark Dion show. And I do give Mark credit. His reaction off air was exactly the same as his reaction on air. He had given me a list of no-goes, so no snakes. And I think he had a few other animals on there that he just did not want to be in the same room of. And I respect that. I thoroughly respect that. Rats, up until that point, were not on that list. So I brought a rat, and my daughter actually came along and held the rat. So it was fun to watch Mark squirm and shriek while my 11-year-old daughter sat there proudly handling the rat that Mark was so afraid of.
If one wants to go about adopting a pet, what happens? What does one have to do? Do you have a vetting process, or what makes a good candidate, I guess?
Yes. Well, first of all, we're open to the public Friday through Tuesday, 11 to 4. And Thursdays, we're open 11 to 6. We do close on Wednesdays. If you're interested in an animal, you can view them online through our Pet Finder, through our website. Or you can just come in and just see what we happen to have that day. We are not first come, first serve. So on animals, we take up to 4 applications. We do check home ownership or landlord. If you have other pets, we check with the vet on them. We try to make it a process that isn't prohibitive. We don't want our process to be so difficult that you just say, forget it. I'm just not going to do this. But we do value our return rate, which is the animals returned to the shelter. We really want the pets in not just a home, but in their right home and their forever home. So we do have the vetting process for that. We have staff members and volunteers that meet with potential adopters. We try and give as much information as we possibly can, depending on what we know, if we have a background on the animal or if it's a stray. We do a thorough actual vetting process of the animals with the veterinarians, vaccines, spay and neuter, microchipping, which is all included in the adoption fee. So if you find an animal that you like, we ask you to fill out the application. We can take up to a week on the application, just depending on how easily we can verify the information provided to us. And from there, it's just a matter of trying to match the animal. It's a bit of a roll of the dice, but given the information, given the interactions, because the decisions ultimately come down to me to approve or deny the applications. And so I try and use all of that to find what I think will be the most successful match. And for adopters, there's no right or wrong adopter. We have people that come in looking to adopt and they seem a little offbeat. They seem a little out of the ordinary, but many times that drive that they have that can be a little overwhelming when you first meet them, they turn that drive into a positive for their pets. And so some of these people that you might be a little curious of because of how they present or their personality, they actually will be really devoted pet owners. And they'll send us photos of their pets. They'll update us on our Facebook. They'll come back and adopt another pet. So it definitely is a process. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is not make an adoption. We're trying to put that animal in its final home more than we're focused on the adoption. We want it to be its final place.
So adoption might be the wrong word to use in some cases?
Yes, but
in most cases, we have
it's matchmaking.
Okay.
And it has, our process, I think, is a fairly good one. I know some animal shelters, you have an easier time getting a mortgage than adopting a cat. So we try and stay on the other side of that. We want people involved with our animals. We are transitional by design, and our animals are not meant to be with us forever at the shelter.
On the other side of the coin, if a person feels overwhelmed by caring for a specific pet, is there a process by which they can return it to forever paws and hopefully end up in someone else's home?
Mm-hmm. So we do have a program where we take animals in from the public for a variety of reasons. And what we do is we have the people call the shelter. If there's availability at the time for the type of animal that they're looking to surrender, we'll schedule an appointment. And that way we can get as much information from you about your pet so that when we're on the other side of that, trying to complete the adoption, we can give the potential homes as much information as we can possibly give them to set them up for success. If you do have a dog, we do an evaluation of the dog first just to make sure that its behavior is safe. Because one of our priorities, of course, is keeping our staff and volunteers safe. So the dogs do go through an evaluation process.
Now, you mentioned that you have some contracts like with Fall River. How is Forever Paws funded?
We're private, so we rely on donations, planned giving. We have a fundraising team, all volunteers. I like to call them the party planning committee. They meet once a week, if you can believe it. And we have basically an event every single month. And most of them are not small events. Most of them are not just easy things you just show up to. They are very involved events that are fun for the public, fun for our community, and help us raise the funds that we need to operate year to year.
Some examples I heard recently on one of the shows that there's a tree festival, a festival of trees that you have?
Yes. So the Festival of Trees, it is Sunday, November 3rd. It's 12 to 5 p.m. at Whites of Westport. It is an amazing event. You buy tickets. You can buy individual tickets or an arm length of tickets. And each tree, which we have more than 100 trees this year confirmed, each tree has a value of at least $100 on it. So one year was a Matchbox car tree. So it was a tree and it had, I think it was like 350 Matchbox cars that came along with the tree if you won it. We have some simple ones. The Dunkin' Donuts tree is usually an every year thing where it's more than $100 in gift certificates, ground coffee, cups, things of that nature from Dunkin' Donuts. It's a great way to get some shopping done and help the animals. I will say that anyone that can get overwhelmed by sensory issues, it is extremely difficult from that perspective. Most of the trees are blinking. Most of them have lights. They're about 3 foot kind of novelty trees that mm-hmm. you can buy. There's holiday music going. There's a bake sale. And it is an incredibly well-attended event. So I would caution people, if sensory is an issue for you, plan to take breaks or just plan appropriately with other people so that you have an out once you're there.
And I think I read something on the website about a path of bricks or something like that. Is that a way of raising funds?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you can purchase a brick. It's $100 for the brick. And we have a pathway next to the catios I mentioned. It's a very pretty area. And it's actually broken up into two sections. One section is for the humans that other people are honoring. And the other section is the animals that people are honoring. So you can purchase the brick and have it inscribed. If you want to memorialize your pet, friend that is a huge animal advocate, we have that happen a lot, or anything that strikes you. I know I personally have one for a foster dog that ended its life in our home. And I personally felt, since I may have been projecting a little, but I felt he had been dumped in the park at about 12 years old. And he was blind, he was covered in growths, and I think they couldn't deal with the end of his life. And so they dumped him so that someone else would deal with it. And so I felt that since he had been treated so poorly and so disposable to someone, that he should be honored forever somewhere. So there is a brick for him in our brick pathway.
Now, if someone's interested in this line of work or interested in animals in general, or do you have volunteer opportunities and internship possibilities for someone to explore?
Yes, we rely heavily on volunteers. I don't believe we could reasonably operate the shelter if not for the volunteer engagement that we have. So each month, the first Sunday, we have a volunteer orientation. You don't have to call ahead. You can just show up for it. It's at about 9:45 Sunday morning, first Sunday of each month. Or if you'd just like more information on volunteering, you can call our volunteer coordinator, Joyce, at 508-679-3063, especially if you're looking for something like an internship. Or we have a lot of community service volunteers, kids that are graduating high school that have a community service prerequisite. A lot of them like to do that with animals, and so they choose our shelter to do that.
And I'd like to give you an opportunity to give us any information that you'd like us to know about, and also your contact information, how people can contact you for more information.
Absolutely. So Forever Paws, like I said, is in the south side of the city. We're at 300 Linwood Street. We can also be viewed at foreverpaws.com. P-A-W-S, as you rightfully pointed out earlier. We are open to the public Friday through Tuesday, 11 to 4, Thursday, 11 to 6, and we're closed on Wednesday. Forever Paws is a fantastic organization. We do a lot of amazing work. Our staff and volunteers, they are amazing people that are incredibly committed to the welfare of the animals. And they get peed on a lot, they step in a lot of poop, and they just keep doing it willingly day after day and successfully. We've had, for this year so far, 700 adoptions. Last year, we adopted out 812 animals, and we have a return rate of about 27 animals per year. So it's something that we're really proud of, and that's very important to us, to get the animals into their final home and with their right family.
Well, Mr. Fadet, thank you so much for taking the opportunity to be part of this podcast and to make us aware of the services you offer. And thank you for opening yourself up as you did in this podcast as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. And it's very important to me. I believe that fear feeds off of silence. And so people that may qualify under an other box out of the usual, I believe that talking about these things like you do is life-saving to people.
Thank you very much. I remind everybody that music heard on My Presence on Your Journey is written by George Winston. And you can hear this podcast and other podcasts by going to our website, which is www.community.autism.resources.com. And you can get other information about Community Autism Resources as well. We're also available on iTunes. And to do that, you can go to iTunes, you can go to the bookstore and do a search and look for Autism, A Presence on Your Journey. And this is Dennis Polselli. Thank you for listening.